This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com, The Big Change Program, and WellStart Health. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live an exciting and epic life. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. It's with Sarah Bofinger, who goes by Mer Goddess, as in Mer, the ocean, the sea, like mermaid. And it's a really fitting name for her. Sarah swam before she could walk, literally. She was born with hip dysplasia. I thought the same thing. Isn't that something that golden retrievers get? And she required 6 surgeries before she celebrated her 4th birthday. So as a baby, she was put in the water for therapy and rehabilitation, and she took to it like a mer goddess to water. And swimming, as well as dancing and gymnastics and other sports and activities, helped her take her mind off the discomfort and pain of those constant hip problems. But a 7th surgery at age 15, which cut the bone and added pins, proved especially painful. And the rehab took a lot longer than it had done before, which took Sarah out of her swim team, out of her element, out of her community. And like a lot of people, she got addicted to pain meds, the ones that were just given to her for sort of short-term use in the hospital, the morphine, and then her outpatient drugs of Tylenol with codeine. And as she recovered physically, but sank ever deeper into substance abuse, Sarah watched her Olympic dreams drifting away. After all, good female swimmers typically make the Olympics as, you know, teenagers, age 15, age 16. By the time they're 20, they're pretty much washed up. And she saw the clock ticking, and she saw her opportunity gone forever. And she felt sorry for herself, gave up, and used pills and booze as the way out. And her rock bottom and her slow and unlikely redemption, which is pointing towards the 2020 Olympics, when she will be in her 30s, is one of the most inspiring stories I've ever been privileged to share on this podcast. Spoiler alert for you plant fans. Sarah went vegan 120 days before we spoke, inspired by a mutual friend, Laura Marks. Before we get to the interview, a little bit of business. All right, so the business for this week is twofold. One is I would love to get more patrons, which is to say more people contributing financially to help me devote the time and the resources to this show. So if you're a longtime fan, and you have it in your budget to spare $1 a month, or 2 or 6, or 18, or whatever, that really helps me. And you can do that at plantyourself.com. Just go to the right sidebar and click on the Patreon link. Thanks. Second thing, WellStart Health is going to be starting our coach training probably in the next couple of weeks. So if you haven't gotten in touch with me, I know a lot of you have, and I've put you on a waiting list to let you know, but we're getting rolling. So if you'd like to become a health coach, now note this is not yet a certification program, so you're not going to come away with any fancy letters after your name. I guess I could, you know, give you some like they do in The Wizard of Oz, but it's really what I consider to be the best practices in coaching and helping people shift their behaviors and helping them follow through on their desire and motivation. So if you're interested in learning that from me and from others, drop me a line, howard@wellstarthealth.com. All right, so that's out of the way. Let's get back to our conversation with the Mer Goddess. So without further ado, Sarah Bofinger, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is going to end up being audio only or video. We've been trying video and having some technical difficulties, but if people are watching it on the video, you've got a patch on your hoodie. Can you tell us what it says and what it means?
It says the United States Olympic team, and I am currently training for the 2020 Olympics, and so today one of my yoga friends brought me this sweatshirt, and so to me this represents that I've already made it.
All right. Well, so we'll look back on this interview in a couple of years, and I will be bragging up and down about it.
Yes.
So, tell us your story. You first, tell us like the sport and a little bit of the context, and then we can get into your amazing journey.
Yes. So I love to swim. And so currently, you know, I'm not saying that I'm swimming certain events, because I am swimming all the events to see what it is that my body is going to be the best at. And so for me, like, I swam before I walked. And so that's why my passion is swimming. And that's why I'm a mermaid.
Oh, okay. Yeah, your email signature says mer goddess, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You swam before you walked. Was that like oversight on your parents' part? Like, they didn't notice that you fell into a river or something? How did that happen?
Well, no, just because I'll get a little bit into it. I was born with hip dysplasia, and most, if you've heard of hip dysplasia, most times you hear it from a dog. A dog usually has hip dysplasia. You don't really hear many humans having hip dysplasia, but right. What it is that your hips are completely dislocated. And so having hip dysplasia at such a young age, the doctors recommended that swimming would be essentially a really great sport, just like for me to do rehab. So I didn't actually think that I would, you know, get into swimming, but it was just for me to just kind of de-stress, because, you know, you're on traction. There's a lot of stress going on in the body as a as a little baby, you know, trying to get all these surgeries. So I was able to get into the water, and that helped me, you know, kind of define me, right? Because most children like walk maybe before they're a year. I think it took me a year and some months to finally be able to walk. And so for me, just the water was that for me.
Gotcha. So do you have memories of that time, or is this all like stories you've been told by your parents and others?
I have like a few memories, but not like really clear. I mean, I know that, yeah, my parents, they were really, I was the firstborn child. So this was all new for them. You know, they didn't have any children before. So they wanted to do the best that they could for me and to make sure that I could still live a happy, healthy life. Right.
Hmm. So what did the surgeries and the rehab do? Did it bring you back to, quote, you know, normal hip function, or was there lingering issues?
So I needed to have 6 surgeries before I was 3.5 years old. And so they had told me that these surgeries, I would be good, or I might need another surgery like maybe high school age, like 15. And so I actually had pretty normal function hips. That's when I got into swimming. I was a dancer. I did some gymnastics. My parents had me in all types of activity, so I could kind of forget about, you know, the hips and all those things. But I did suffer with pain and things when I would do sports. And so then that later led to when I was 15, I went to the doctor and they told me that I needed to have a 7th hip surgery. And what had happened was on the right side of my hip, most of that was done with most of the surgeries. But on the left side, the cartilage was wearing out. So you probably hear this in older adults: when the cartilage is running out, they're going to need to have a hip replacement. Well, with a kid that's still growing, if they cut the bone into 3 places and then pinned it, I would able to have normal hip function. And then 1 year later, they would take the pins out.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So is that what you did?
Yes, that's what I did. So I had the surgery. You know, that surgery for me led to some addiction and, you know, some other things, because that surgery, it took me out of my element, you know, because now you've already had these surgeries. And then at 15, you're having another one that you didn't think that you needed.
Mm. And addiction to pain meds?
Yeah, pain meds, because this surgery, I was put on a morphine pump. And the morphine pump was essentially to, you know, just help with having the pain because you had this reconstructive hip surgery. I was on crutches for about 2 weeks, but I was on the pump in the hospital for about a week. But I was mostly drugged out. I mean, I didn't really recognize. I'll say that I don't even really remember that, but I just know that I was on that morphine pump, and that just led to doing Tylenol, codeine, you know, pain pills, and through all my life just kind of led to destruction.
So you were out of it in the hospital for a week. Then I guess they sent you home with a prescription for like 90 days worth of pills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tylenol with codeine. They would send, that was the main one that they sent me with. But then once I would take a lot of like ibuprofen and things because it was just like I had in my mind that my hip was going to hurt. And so now I got used to taking something when my hip would hurt.
Gotcha. And I'm trying to picture like this sort of, you know, I don't know the story, but I'm picturing like this sweet suburban girl who's a gymnast and a dancer and a swimmer suddenly having to figure out how to become an opioid addict.
Yeah.
Like how did you do it? Like did you just sort of intuit your way towards it? I mean, it's a skill. Like if you told me to become a drug addict, I wouldn't know how to do it, where to go, how to source it, what to take. How did you navigate that?
So I'll say that for me, you know, falling in love with swimming and all those things, like that was my dream to, you know, be an Olympian. And so at 15, if you have followed the sport or anything, you know, a lot of the good swimmers, they kind of make the Olympics at 15 years old. So for me, when I had this moment of, you know, just feeling like unworthy for myself, I then allowed myself to, you know, just basically I just felt so bad for myself that for me, the pills was that way out for me. Instead of like talking to someone or, you know, just like saying, hey, this was a setback. Let me like go through and like move past this and I can still do it. But for me, I had given up. And so giving up was like, oh, I'm just going to take this pill. I'm just going to do this and, you know, I'll get through it.
Hmm. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine myself at the age of 15 having any sort of, you know, emotional resilience or resources around that.
Yeah.
So how long did that last?
So I'll say, you know, like my parents also were, you know, like they kind of got like when they knew the doctors were giving me these things, like they kind of like took a hold on that. But like as you're in high school, you know, you ask around, people, you know, have different things. They have their parents getting things. So I would just, I mean, this lasted like, I mean, it went through all the way to even when I went to college. It really, like, I'll say that, like, actually it kind of went all the way until 2014 when I decided to find holistic healthcare options without using pills, like to find ways that I could relieve any pain that I was having without taking a pill.
So what were the downsides of the pills? Was it your relationship with them? Was it the effects they were having? Like what made you say this is not optimal?
Well, I'll just say that when, you know, you're taking a bunch of pills for all of a sudden, it just stops giving you the effect that it first gave you. So, you know, you first are like, oh, this is working. And then eventually, like when you're taking like one Aleve or two Aleve or, you know, ibuprofen or, you know, five or six of these pills and finding that it's not really doing anything for you, you're just like, okay, what is the point of this? And is this my life? You know, like, is this where I'm headed? Is this what I want for myself? Mm-hmm.
So was it that the pain was bad, or was it sort of a fear of the pain that might come or might come back?
I believe that it was a fear of, you know, the pain coming back and attracting that those scenarios that I was born with and then had to have those surgeries again to keep reoccurring in my life, because I didn't want to have a hip replacement. I didn't want to have, you know, and I didn't even want to have that last surgery. I hoped that it was all done, you know, but I think for me, like, yeah, just constantly thinking that, oh, I'm going to be in pain, or, you know, the people saying, oh, be careful, you know, you have these fragile hips, like that, all those, you know, those words, those things that I would be thinking really made it so I believe that.
Mm. So when you were growing up between like 3.5 and 15, you know, I know you were very active, you were very, you know, into swimming and lots of other activities. Did you have a self-identity as someone who had had these problematic hips and they might continue? Because I'm thinking about, like, your goal is, I want to be one of the fastest swimmers in the world.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you were born with hip dysplasia. Like, was there a conflict in there, or was it not that heavy for you?
So there was a conflict, and I'll say the conflict started when I was about 11 years old, because at age 6, I joined the swim team. I ran out and was like, Mommy, I love it. You know, I want to do this. And then I became very good. Like, I was good. Like, I, you know, I was a natural distance swimmer. The coach would put me with, you know, the higher people. But once I started really, like, actually, like, you know, training really hard and these types of things at 11 years old, I started to then think, like, oh, what if I can't do it? What if my hips are, I'm not able to do it? And so then that would be when the pain started. I would sit out and practice. I didn't really practice that much because I was like, oh, my hips. Then once I was on the swim team at age 17, I, you know, brought alcohol to a swim party. And, you know, it just started, like, my relationship with swimming, it started affecting my relationship with swimming.
Hmm. So it's at a certain point, some part of you, like, I'm picturing, like, this really energetic, positive, optimistic, innocent little girl who's like all about, I'm going to do this. And
yes.
Then it's at some point, some older part started saying, yeah, but.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what happened. Fear that of not knowing or believing that I couldn't do it overcame that excited, like, little girl that just wanted to have fun.
Hmm. So 2014, you decide you're done with pills. You've got to find another way. What do you do?
So I found this place in, I'm in the DC area, and I found this place called Nava Health and Vitality. And so what they have is a space that offers acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, natural supplements, and showing you ways to alleviate this pain that you think that you're having. And helps you not actually need the pills. So I haven't even had an ibuprofen, a Tylenol, anything like that since I started applying acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, and, you know, just mindfulness.
Hmm. So at what point, I don't know how old you are now, so I don't know exactly how far, where the story goes. At what point did you decide you wanted to be an Olympian again?
So when I was I'm 31. And
okay.
So I would say in 2012, let's take a step back. In 2010, I was working a job, and I got fired. And so when I was looking to, find another job, I had received unemployment and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity to kind of like find myself and see what I want to do. I was overweight. I couldn't fit in my jeans. I was just like, just really, you know, not really liking what I was doing. So then in that quest, I decided that I wanted to help people while I was helping myself. In 2012, I started a personal training and swim coaching business. In that time, I was helping people and all these things. And then in 2014, honestly, when I, you know, found this holistic care and all these things, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to announce that I'm going to train for the Olympics, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but this time I am not going to let my obstacles be the cause of me not doing what it is that I want to do.
So 2010, you quit your job, you were getting unemployment, and it's like, what happened? It was 2 years when you announced your business. What did you do during those 2 years?
So those 2 years, I was getting starting to get into the best shape of my life. So, you know, I was going to the gym. I had cut out alcohol at that time because from, you know, college, I would say in 2010 was when I actually stop drinking alcohol altogether. So, you know, end of high school, early college, I was drinking a lot of alcohol. And in 2010, when I lost my job because the alcohol was just kind of getting ridiculous and the pills and everything, and I said, you know what, I'm going to at least stop this. I stopped eating fast food. And so I just started being more aware, starting to really love myself, you know, because when you start to really look at your life and what it is that you're doing, and you're not happy with what you're doing, you know, you start to then like, okay, let me make some changes about myself. And so that's what I did for those 2 years. And then I really created the personal training swim coaching business because I felt like I needed to create some kind of, you know, abundance or money for myself so that I could then train for the Olympics. So, you know, I was always putting the Olympics or training or whatever it is that I wanted to do last and trying to then, oh, I'll make this amount of money and then I'll go and do it. But then in 2014, what had happened was I was inspiring so many people. I was motivating people and I was running myself down and I wasn't doing what it was that I wanted to do. And I wanted to see how far my body could go, how far I could push myself. And so in that time, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it and I'm going to train people. And, you know, and that was how I got to 2012 and 2014.
Gotcha. So what was your family thinking at this time? You know, this girl with all these possibilities and skills and seeing, you know, I don't know how much you hid from them about your addictions. What was that like?
Well, I'll say that they saw a lot of a person that maybe I would have never wanted them to see. Especially like in college, I went to Frostburg University, and I failed out. I got a 0.75 because I was just interested in drinking alcohol and not really attending classes and not really applying myself because, again, I was just so lost. I was using the alcohol and the pain pills to try to find myself, but I was actually what I was actually doing was not finding myself. I was just like destroying myself. And so my parents saw that. My dad would go to church, you know, every day and just pray that, you know, I would find myself. And I was surrounded with other people that were similar, like the people that I dated, you know, they reflected who I was at the time. And, you know, and it was just an interesting time for me. And they, you know, it was really probably sad for them because they did so much for me. And so they just didn't understand why I would be like that, you know. Sorry, I'm a little remembering this.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2014, so we'll take it to the positive place. So that's when you figured out how to cut out the pills and do these other nourishing things.
Yes.
So what happened then?
So then also in that time I cut out gluten and dairy. The place Nava Health and Vitality Center, they have a test that they do. And so I found that my body was really sensitive to casein and gluten. And so I started cutting those things out and my body was feeling really great. And I found some swim teams to be on. And so I was like really training and I was noticing that even with the recovery, with the acupuncture, you know, the new way that I was eating, these things were really helping me. And like, I was getting faster and, you know, it was really exciting to see like myself being faster than I was when I was 15.
And, you know, how at that point, how far away were you in terms of capability from being an Olympian? You know, because I don't exactly know, like, what the times you need are, like...
So, I would say that at that time, I was about 10 seconds away from a Olympic cut. And so with the Olympics, you can qualify all the way up a month before the Olympic trials. So, you know, I knew that I had, you know, time, but it was also about qualifying for certain state championships in your state, you know, and all those things. So I was, you know, focusing on just really getting my times down and having more quality to my swims versus just like training really hard and not taking care of my body.
So did you find a coach?
I did find a coach. I had, I started with Columbia Masters and they were really great. I coached the swim team in return for free swimming. I also found a team called GBSA, which is a club kid team. So these kids were ranging from 13 to 18 years old that I was swimming with. And in return, I was giving them some of my strength training tips because most of my how I've gotten stronger is by really dedicating myself to my strength training outside of the pool. And they were able to help me with my technique and, you know, just different things in the pool, the cardio and all those things in the pool.
Gotcha. So you said 10 seconds away. So what did that mean? What, like, what sort of distance are we talking about? And,
So I was swimming, events like the 50 free, the 100 free, the 100 fly, the 200 free. Those were the events that I had been concentrating on. I've always been a distance swimmer, which a distance swimmer swims like, you know, 500 is like your shortest race and you can go all the way up to 1000, 1500, 1650, but I wanted to do something that people told me I could never do, and that was be a sprinter because I'm 5'3". If you see Olympic swimmers, they're like 5'9", 5'7", maybe is the short. I think Janet Evans was 5'5". So, you know, I'm a little bit much smaller than most, and it takes a lot of, you know, muscle and just like, you have to just really have some really good fast twitch muscles. And so that has been what I, you know, been working with, but you know, now I'm trying all the events, I'm doing all the strokes, and just you know, just kind of giving myself more of a variety versus just this thing that I need to do, you know.
Gotcha. Are there any Olympians your age in the sport?
I believe Ryan Lochte is, he's going, I think, for 2020. He's 32 years old, but I'm pretty sure that there aren't any Olympians my age that have never gone. Usually the people that are my age have already been to the Olympics. They've been doing this, swimming fast. You know, I've had to reconstruct my whole entire, not just my life, but my swimming stroke, you know, my eating habits. Just I have changed myself so much to accomplish what I have today that it's remarkable that I'm able to do this at this age and be faster than I've ever been, because for me, like, I've never been this fast before, and it's exciting to think that I'm just going to get faster.
Right. So are you on anybody's radar now in terms of the powers that be for Olympic swimming?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm kind of I run into different people all the time. Like, you know, I met Ryan Lochte at a nationals race. I've met Carlin Pipes, that's a national swim world champion that wins a bunch of things, and, you know, she's done that. I met Bruce Gemmel, which is Katie Ledecky's Olympic coach. He sends many Olympians, you know, every year, and he's in the D.C. area. You know, I spoke with him, and he told me that, you know, a lot of the older athletes are doing a lot more outside of the pool than inside. And, you know, just told me that, I mean, I was basically doing what it is that I could do.
That must feel good.
Yeah, it is. Cause, you know, I mean, it's just, I'm just, you know, just, I've just decided that I'm just going to try my best every day and, you know, see what happens. I mean, I will say, you know, just recently becoming vegan has opened up a lot for me as far as, you know, gaining speed, gaining muscle recovery, gaining strength, gaining more endurance. So I'm excited to keep continuing with this and seeing what happens with that.
Right. So that's where we're going with the,
yes.
Right. So a bunch of listeners are now jumping up and down. They're going, oh, now I get why we're having this conversation. So what led you? You're already gluten-free, dairy-free, alcohol-free, junk food-free. What led you to consider going animal product-free?
So I got into Bikram yoga last year. I got into Bikram yoga and I started practicing Bikram yoga. And what Bikram yoga is, it's a 26 times two series. So you're doing 26 postures and two breathing exercises. And what this particular practice does is it is healing you from the inside out. And so essentially, if I'm doing this, you know, 30 classes or so every month, you know, I am healing my body. My body is essentially telling me what it needs and what it wants to do. And so what happened in August was someone decided to say, you know, you should just try cutting out pork. And I mean, I was eating like 2.5 pounds of bacon, you know, a day. Like I was eating a lot of meat, because if you are an athlete or you don't know about, you know, what the benefits of cutting out meat and being a vegan are, you hear this protein, 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 you know, I need protein. I got to get my protein in. And so I was like, there's no way that I could ever be vegan because I got to get my protein, you know? And so, but the moment that I cut out pork, my body was like, chicken and beef are heavy. Then for 2 months, I did a fish diet. And my body was like, this is heavy. And I just decided, my boyfriend and I were like, let's just do a 15-day experiment. Like, we're not going to, like, say we're vegans, but we're just going to, like, try it out and see what happens. And in those 15 days, I had so much energy. I could do, like, 5 workouts one day, come back the next day and do another 5, just, like, continuing working out all day long. And I was like, I'm sold. Like, I'm sold. Like, I don't need to go back, you know. And what's also great is that, like, I influence so many people on a daily basis. And when they found out that, you know, I was going vegan and I was trying this way, so many other people wanted to try that way too. And it just, like, really, it was just really great to see other people's benefits too from trying it, just by me saying, hey, this is my experience. They're like, what are you doing? You have so much energy, all this stuff. And it's just like, this is what I did. And I didn't just go from eating meat to not eating meat. I did it the way my body wanted to do it. And it's like, my body doesn't want it. Like, I can't say that I'm going to be a vegetarian or a vegan for 8 years and go back to it. Like, I think when people try one thing and then go back, I think it's because they weren't actually ready to fully give it all they could, and then they are like, well, I don't like this, so I'm gonna go back. And like, for me, like, I'm sold. Like, I just make so many amazing meals. There's so much creativity that comes from it. Like, my mind, body, and spirit are so connected. Like, I just feel like eating meat for me was like putting cobwebs in my body.
So you were eating 2.5 pounds of bacon a day, and yeah. You decided to, like just from a practical perspective, how do you go about altering the design and structure of your meals? Did you know what to do? Did you have resources? Did you just, you know, replace it with like vegan junk food for a while? Did you go really clean? Like, what were the steps when you said, okay, now I'm going to do this? Now what?
So I just really followed my body. So my massage therapist, Laura, she has been a vegan for 32 years. And so she, you know, I see her once a week. And so she would always give me these amazing tips and resources and telling me other things that I could look up and all those things. And so I also wanted my meals to feel like I was eating meat, but not eating meat. So like having like really like just really good meals. Like, for instance, like, I love using lentils and making like a lentil casserole, and like having like, you know, just those lentils. Sometimes I put beans in it, rice, you know, whatever it is, like complex carbs. Like, I try to eat all of my nutrients, whether it's vegetables, you know, I try to have a balance with everything. And so I try to, in each meal that I have, I try to create a balance for myself in those meals.
Gotcha. So I think it was Laura who connected us.
Yes.
So yeah, if you want to give her a public shout out here, so that
if Laura, thank you.
So let people know, like, you know, if she's okay with it, who she is and how people can get in touch with her.
Yeah, so Laura Marks is my massage therapist. We met, you know, I told her my story, what I was trying to accomplish, and she loved it. And, you know, and we had talked about, like, I mean, honestly, I had always kind of wanted to be vegan, but I didn't necessarily know how to start. And so just with her guidance, she also does hypnosis in my massages. So she has been helping me with performance hypnosis, I'll say, where it's allowing me to like just clear out some old trauma, some triggers and different things that aren't serving me right now, and are helping me, you know, stay more into the positive mindset. But her business is called Wellness Wisdom, and you can find her on Facebook, Laura Marks.
Wellness Wisdom, Laura Marks. Cool. Yeah. I was going to ask you about sort of the, the mental parts of this, because, you know, not being an Olympian, I read a lot, and I know that there's these famous stories about Michael Phelps and the mental workouts that he does. At a certain point, everybody in the Olympics is kind of like superhuman physically. They've trained. Nobody's there because they haven't trained their ass off. Nobody's there because they don't have incredible innate ability and technique. But the thing that separates like gold from not podiuming is usually mental.
And yes.
So what can you talk about what you do to get the mental edge?
So I will say that the Bikram yoga for me has been getting me into my element. So what Bikram yoga, I mean, you do the same thing every single day. The teacher is the mind and you are the body. And so when you actually receive, like, this person is I'm just the body, and you can clear all of your thoughts, like, it's hot in here, like, I can't do this posture, like, all those things, when you, like, clear that out, you have an amazing practice. And so what's happening after a year of Bikram yoga for me is I am able to now apply this into my swimming. So, like, for instance, last weekend, I decided that I was going to swim events that I normally don't swim, and I was going to have a really good time doing it. I didn't care about the time. I didn't care about anything. I was going to mimic how my yoga is. Whatever I said in my mind was going to happen. I was going to be in the present moment, and that was what I was going to do. That was my best performance ever. I got first in the 200 fly, dropped 11 seconds. I was second in the 200 IM, dropped 3 seconds. And in the 50 breast, which, I mean, breaststroke for a person with hip dysplasia, like, I dropped 8 seconds and placed third in my age group. And it was just so, like, relaxing for me to, like, see that, like, if I actually just have fun in the moment, that is my strategy for how I am going to be in the moment. Is because, like, all the years that I've been swimming, I would be like, oh my gosh, like, here's the race, you know, I gotta, like, I'm worried now, like, and I'm sure every Olympian has their own way of getting to this particular point, but for me, like, you can't just tell me, like, hey, you should, like, you know, just get zenned out, or, you know, just be in this space. Like, I have needed that structure that Bikram yoga has given to me, and I've been able to put that structure now into the pool, and that is allowing me to really see, like, some serious changes in myself. Like, I'm just really excited now to race every time. It's like, oh my gosh, like, what's going to happen now? You know, because I'm in the moment, like, I'm enjoying this moment right now.
I'm imagining there's a lot of people who are trying to wrap their head around that as a strategy. Like, you know, if you want to compete, you've got to be competitive. You've got to, you know, you've got to be angry at the other people. You're going to, you know, sort of want to trash talk. You want to be, like, totally in fight or flight mobilization. How do you mobilize your body for that intense expenditure without going into, you know, a fear response or a danger response if you're totally, like, loving life at that moment?
Well, I'll say that, you know, I believe that fear and excitement are the same, like, the same feeling, but it just depends on how you turn it in. So if I can turn that flight or fight into excitement, into, you know, yes, like, I'm excited that, you know, I'm going to be, like, doing this race right here, for me, that's just like being angry at someone, or, you know, oh, I'm going to beat them. It gives me the same feeling as if I were to say, oh yeah, like, I'm going to beat you, you know, like, and it's just because of, for me, like, what I've gone through and just my own personal experience of what I've needed to get me to this point. But I believe for myself that it's, for me, that's the same feeling of like, oh, I'm going to kick your butt. Yes, I'm going to enjoy this moment. You
know? Wow, that's so fascinating. And I'm just finished listening to a podcast. My friend Peter Bregman has a podcast, and he interviewed Lisa Feldman Barrett, who wrote a book called How Emotions Are Made. And she talks about just that thing, that we're our brains interpret sensation and then decide what the emotion is going to be. And it's so fascinating to hear you, you know, articulate that as an experiencer and a practitioner of that.
Yes. And I'll say that, I mean, honestly, becoming vegan, today is my 120th day, 4 months now of, you know, being vegan. And I'll say that it's just getting more and more clear for me. Like, I mean, honestly, just last weekend, March 3rd, was when I really experienced this experience of, like, excitement and how I'm going to approach my strategy when I swim. Because before, I would get like so wrapped up. Like, for instance, February 15th, I had a race. Bruce Gemmel was there. There were so many fast people there. And I got in my head and I believed that I didn't deserve to be there. Mm. And so since I believed that I didn't deserve to be there, I didn't. I did horrible. I did worse times, I added times, I got upset, you know. And the best thing that my coach said to me in that moment was, Sarah, it's just swimming. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. It's just swimming. Like, if I were to put all this pressure on myself, imagine Michael Phelps putting all this pressure on himself all the time, he wouldn't be the greatest Olympian he is today if he did that to himself, you know. And we all have to learn our own lessons to get to where we personally need to be. But for me, I'll say, you know, being a vegan and practicing Bikram yoga every single day, at least getting 30 practices in, is shaping who I am becoming in the water.
Hmm. And probably out of the water as well.
Yes, exactly. In all of life, yes. Yeah.
So let's do a little advertisement for the vegan plant-based lifestyle for athletes. What have you noticed changes in yourself, whatever, physical performance, appearance, you know, what it's been, how many days now did you say?
120.
120. So what have you noticed?
So I have noticed, I mean, the energy that I have is amazing. Just, I just didn't know that I could have this much energy off of plants. Like, I mean, it just, I didn't believe it. Like, I honestly didn't believe it. When people even said to me, look, there's no way that you could be a vegan because of the amount of meat that you need. But what I'm noticing is that my body was doing so much work to digest that food that now I can use that energy that was digesting my food to now putting it into my workout. So now I can do 2 90-minute, you know, Bikram yoga classes in a day, 2 swim practices, a cycling class, you know, a Pilates class, you know, whatever it is that I have scheduled for that day, I still have energy and my recovery time. I have no hip pain anymore. I almost forget that I've had 7 hip surgeries because the amount of recovery that my hips are having, my mind and body connection, as far as like before I never used my legs. Now my mind and body know what to do so that I can achieve getting faster, getting stronger, being more disciplined with myself.
Mm. So have you noticed in that time an increase in your performance? Drop in
yes.
Seconds?
Yes. When I first started, I'll say the performance was my technique, because if you're familiar with swimming or even golfing or any of these sports that, you know, have a certain technique that is required so that you can move your own personal body to the maximum potential that it can, that has helped me in that way.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And as far as times, like I said, last weekend was really the first weekend that I really had like an exceptional race where, you know, I was able to put like, because I felt like I could still go faster. Like I just noticed that, oh my gosh, I went this fast. I know next time I can go even faster. And like when I told people, even some people that were vegan, when it was even like 90 or 100 days, they're like, oh my gosh, you're going to get faster. And like, I believe that and I can see it in my performance, in my practices, now in the races. Like, I mean, that 100 mark, I think, was like a goal mine for me to be like, okay, let's see what's going to be coming next, because I have some big races coming up. Like, I'm going to be traveling to Indiana for national championships. I'll be in Orlando in July. And so I have some pretty big races coming up. And so I'm excited to see what will happen with my times this year.
Gotcha. And can do you have to qualify for nationals and for Orlando, or can anyone just sign up and do a heat?
Yes, you have to qualify. I've qualified in all the freestyle events so far. So this weekend, and I have another meet in Virginia to see if I can qualify for other events. So then I can choose what it is that I want to do. You can swim up to 6 events at the national time. And this is U.S. Masters. So this is people ages from 18 to 100. You know, they're all swimming and they all have certain times. Like I'm in age group 30 to 34. So I'm going to be getting the times for my age group. And with the times, you can still get qualifying times for, you know, Olympic times, you know, national times for USA Swimming. You can get these in U.S. Masters because they're both sanctioned by FINA.
Gotcha. So when might you know about the Olympics?
Well, I would say for me, my own personal goal is I would hope to know like by the end of this summer, as far as like, you know, what events I'm really going to be singling, like really focusing on, and you know, seeing like I'm hoping that my times are much closer to the times. And so that I can go into 2019 and, you know, go to South Korea to, you know, do championships there and just, you know, qualify for the national team and all of those things.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's still a lot of exciting. I mean, you guys are watching the caterpillar turn into the butterfly. So you all get to experience an amazing transformation of, you know, from what was to what will be coming.
And I'm guessing, you know, that you're putting everything into this Olympic dream. And at the same time, from the way you describe how your psyche is changing, that the goal is like, the goal is to get to the Olympics and do well and maybe win a medal. But really the goal is to become who you have to become in order to pursue that.
Yes, exactly. So actually the journey of this is actually the most important part versus winning the gold medal. Because, you know, at first it was just kind of like, why is it that I want to be an Olympian? You know, like, I mean, I always like, because it's just like, you know, as a kid, like, you know, I had some jobs, you know, I did some things, and it's just like, what is it for me? And for me, like, I just want to achieve this for myself, to prove that out of all of the things that I've been through, I still was able to create this person that I wanted to be. And also to like motivate and inspire other people that maybe are in a time of, you know, like just self-doubt and, you know, not really thinking that they can go to that job or they can work out or they can lose those 30 pounds. But I want to be that person that they looked up to and said, you know what, she did that, so I know that I can do this little thing that I want to do here, or big thing, or whatever it is that they want to achieve in their life.
So how do you explain to people that you're not different from them? Because I know so many of my friends and colleagues who have made these huge transformations, and you know they look good and they perform, like something happens where people look at them and say, well, you know, it was inevitable for you. You're different from me. You've got something special. Do you sense that's a barrier you have to overcome with people?
Yes, I do believe it, and I really believe that it comes with self-love and really, really, like, loving yourself first and believing in yourself. And when I see people, like, have gratitude and just, like, they start to unravel that way of thinking, because it's a way of thinking that we have developed as a society, because it's like you see actors, you see like all these people, you know, they have all this money, and it's like you think like, oh my gosh, how could I do that? Like, I'm just this little girl, you know, sitting here. And like, I mean, that was what I thought my whole entire life, until like I just had all these several breaking moments for me, that it was just like, hey, do you really want to do this? Okay, let's keep going, you know, and just finding that positivity in myself and in others that essentially motivates me to be better. Because I mean, I'm bringing the community into this. I work out with regular people every day, and I tell them how great they are and how they can accomplish these things because I'm doing it every day. And like, for me, it's not even about like being famous or anything like that. It's just really about unraveling that conditioning that we have all have at some point in our life, and we all can unravel it and be our best selves.
Okay. But how did you love yourself? Was it a decision? Because I know everybody hears that, and it's like, you know, a nice thing to see on a Facebook meme or a doily, like, believe in yourself, you know, love yourself. Yeah. And yet, you know, there have been plenty of times in my life where if someone had told me to love themselves, you know, I would have wanted to punch them in the nose and say, but you don't know how profoundly unlovable I am. Like, do you want me to believe a lie? Like, what are the steps that you think people need to go through to go from one state to the other?
So I'll say for myself, I needed to hit rock bottom. So when I say, we didn't really talk much about this part of my journey, but for me, hitting rock bottom was being in a 9-year relationship and it ending just like that, having no money, nowhere to go, and just feeling like I was just this awful person, like that I was unworthy, that I just had nothing. And so what happened in that moment was I started meditating, and I started meditating to find God, you know, source, like to find like that oneness that is in me. I wanted to find it for myself, and I became very curious and very really, like, that was what I did. And so I did a lot of meditation. I started meditating maybe 10 minutes a day. And when I say meditation, you can put some like cool, you know, little sounds on and just sit with your thoughts. What are you thinking? What is it that you're saying to yourself that's creating this way of thinking for you? What is this doing for yourself that you are allowing this type of self-doubt, this talk that you're saying to yourself, like, what is creating that? And so the more that I sat in my thoughts, when I was able to fully forgive my ex-boyfriend for terminating that relationship, because at first it feels like it's the worst thing in the world. But when you actually forgive yourself for all of those things that you thought you were the bad person, you didn't do this right, or you didn't do this, when you feel that forgiveness for yourself, that is when you really find self-love, and you just start to like unravel all of the conditioning that you have received in your life, and you just start seeing the positive in every single situation. And the more that you practice this, the more that you sit in silence, the more that you surround yourself with more like-minded people, you then start to fully actually feel what it feels like to love yourself.
So it sounds like the first step was like getting in touch with like a molecule of what I want to call faith. Like here you were.
Yes.
Like I'm unworthy. I'm awful. I've hit rock bottom. And the place I'm going to go looking for redemption is inside. Like that, yes. That must have been a leap.
It was a huge leap. I mean, it was the transition of myself. To who I am right now talking to you, to who I was at the end of 2015, wanting to quit, wanting to give up, wanting to end my life, like wanting to just be done with everything. But when I actually sat with myself and got comfortable with myself and being okay with myself, that was when everything changed for me. The people I surrounded myself with, the ideas that came to life, you know, all these different things started happening to me because I was creating that from the inside. I know. It's awesome.
I just want to put a bow around it and carry it with me and then.
I know. Open
up with it. It's like I just bottled the sun and I just get to, you know. Look at the shine. You're so radiantly articulate about this. It's really inspiring.
I mean, it's just so beautiful because I've gone through it and it motivates me to talk to people about it, to have separate conversations with people about what it is that they're doing. If you don't like what it is that's happening to you, change it and don't look for it from the outside, because that's what I did. When I was looking to make my ex happy, I was trying to change myself. But if I would have just looked inside and realized that that just wasn't for me, like I could have like exited all of those problems that I decided I needed, you know, for my own self. But I'm really grateful for that because I needed that for myself to be in this particular moment right now, because I can just look back and just have so much gratitude for like the person I was, the person that went through all those awful things to now and getting to share that with everyone. And that's just the most amazing thing. It doesn't even matter about actually getting the gold medal. It's about right here where I am. I've already achieved so much. So it's like, it's just going to be the icing on the cake when I get that gold medal and I hear that United States anthem. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like I did this like from the inside out.
Yeah. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation now and not after that gold medal moment, because I think for me, there would be this thought going like, oh, well, Sarah's like special. Like I'm going to be curious and interested, but fundamentally we're different. And like, what I want to say to you right now is like, you're so amazing and you're so totally not special.
Yes.
You know, which sounds horrible, except I think you understand in the context what I mean by that is like, this is totally accessible to all of us.
Yes, we all have a superhero lying inside of us waiting to be unleashed. And the moment that we make the decision that we want to unleash that, that is when we become our greatest selves, and that we can all help change the world that we live in around us just from within.
Oh, I'm writing this down. I think we gave me the
tagline. Yes, write it down.
You gave me the tagline for the episode.
I love it.
On unleashing our inner superhero.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's a great metaphor because I just saw a Black Panther movie, and you know, the thing about the superhero genre is that they all get to have this outsized impact on their world.
Yes. Right,
and we all want that, and we can have it.
We can, but like some of us, like for me, even like I needed to hit rock bottom for me to see that at rock bottom, the only way is up. You can't go any further down. Like it's only up. And when you experience that, when you recognize it, when you, you know, see that in yourself, you then see it in everyone around you. And you then just like can just give all these great tips.
Right. And I'd like to encourage everyone who's listening to accept the fact that right now you are at rock bottom. You don't need to go any lower.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And we get to choose our rock bottom because what for you, the choice, the thing you did at that point was look inward for the source of your agency. For,
yes.
Right? Instead, right? So we don't have to be like, you know, homeless in the gutter with the needle sticking out of our arm.
Mm-hmm.
To be rock bottom. But when you look around and you see like, this is the world that my consciousness has created and my consciousness has created it. Therefore, I need to go and tinker with my consciousness to create something else. Then
yeah.
that can be your moment, right? We're not telling
exactly.
We're not telling people to like wait till it gets really, really bad.
No, please don't. Like, yeah, just, I mean, if you were to just look at your own life right now, and if you were to say, how can I make this better? And if you just took 10 minutes to sit with your own thoughts each day, you will find that you will start to shape what it is that you want on the outside.
Hmm. And I just did an interview a few weeks ago with Emily Fletcher of Ziva Meditation, and her meditation practice follows the same thing. Like the first couple of minutes is mindfulness, the second larger chunk is meditation, and the third is manifesting, where you use the energy to then create in your mind your external reality.
Yes. Exactly. And that's what I'm doing. That's how I'm getting to the Olympics. See, I'm telling you all my secret. I'm going within. I'm learning my lessons. I'm being grateful each day. And I'm just taking it day by day and seeing what happens and not having any expectation but gratitude that, you know what, I figured this out at this age, and it's a beautiful, beautiful gift. And I'm so grateful that I get to share it with all of you and all the people that I conversate with daily. So
cool. So for people who've gotten a hit and want more, do you have a social media presence or a website? Or how can people can keep drinking from the water fountain of wonderful that is Sarah Bofinger?
Yes. Yeah, well, you can find me on social media, Sarah Bofinger. I also have my athlete page, Mer Goddess. And Mer Goddess, I dive a little deeper. I actually blog a lot more. I share my experiences, what I learn each month. So, for instance, February, I learned letting go, not to have attachment to certain things. And then when you don't have attachment, you're able to get the outcome. And so through all of this, you know, through my acupuncture appointments, my vegan meals, you know, I post a lot more of my journey on my Mer Goddess page.
And Mer Goddess, so that would be like Facebook, Instagram.
.com. Yeah, Facebook.
And
Mer Goddess 11. Mer Goddess 11 you can find.
So Mer Goddess is M-E-R, Goddess, and the number 11, two ones.
11. Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
I'll post.
You can find that on Instagram, Facebook. Twitter is Mer Goddess 1. They didn't let me have an 11. I only got, at least I got a 1, number 1. on those. I don't have a website yet, but that is coming because I've started to create events for the community called FLY, First Love Yourself. And so I'm sharing with people how you can actually first love yourself through meditation, through acupuncture, through exercise. And in that, I'm showing people also how to eat a meal without animals so that we can, you know, love ourselves just a little bit more.
Awesome. Do you know what the URL is going to be?
I would assume that I would make it mergoddess.com if that's available. But I am, like I said, I'm just, when the time is right, I, am doing it because I am living, this is my full time. Like I'm not chasing money, I'm creating what it is that I want from the inside, and I am receiving everything that I need when it happens. So, I'm excited to see when all of this happens. It's going to be great.
Awesome. I'm so excited. I'm going to be following all of the social media channels, and we'll hear the anthem in our heads.
Yes.
A couple of years before they're actually going to be playing. Where is 2020? Is that in
Tokyo?
In Tokyo.
Yeah, so that's going to be really exciting. So, the first step is making the Olympic team, and then you have to be top two in the Olympic team. And so, and then in August, you would go to Tokyo.
All right, well.
So I'm just excited to create what it is that I want, and hopes that, I can be the leader to help others create what it is that they want, and we can essentially help change the world.
Awesome. Awesome. So I hope you'll save a few minutes in your schedule for me
of course,
today in Good Morning America and all those are knocking on your door.
Yes, of course. Yes, I will. I'm so excited.
Cool.
When the time is right, they will all be there, and I'll have space for everyone.
Awesome. Well, Sarah Bofinger, it's such a pleasure and an honor and inspiration to hear your story and to be allowed to share it with others. So thank you so much for everything you're doing. Best of luck, and thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show, so thank you.
All right. Be well. All right. What did you think of that? Are you as inspired as I am? Are you going to be rooting for Sarah, first of all, to make it into the 2020 Olympics? And can you imagine her on that podium with the gold medal around her neck? I'm already semi-weeping. I'm so happy to have had this conversation. It's just gotten such a boost of energy and positivity. She's one of these people who really kind of cuts all my excuses out from underneath me and makes me just want to try harder, push farther, focus more, and just smile and be more grateful and more forgiving. So I hope she's had the same effect on you as well. So if you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support our mission, you can subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. And of course, you can become a patron on Patreon as well. We just began a big change program as part of WellStart Health. So you're going to have to wait probably another month. But if you'd like to get on the waiting list, you can do that at bigchangeprogram.com by signing up for the test drive. If you want more about Sarah, you can check out the show notes for today's episode with links to the stuff we talked about at plantyourself.com/271. You can also watch the video. We did manage to get the video working. And so if you want to see us and see our smiling faces connecting with each other, that's also at plantyourself.com/271. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 270 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And you can also at plantyourself.com sign up for my newsletter. And you can do that just at the top right. Just enter your name and email. Okay, what's going on? Garden news. We are getting collard smoothies. I don't know why the collards did so great. The kale, but the collards, my wife took a whole bunch of old seeds and kind of threw them down on the ground just to get them out of the way. And man, they sprouted their own little garden down by the bees. So she is getting stung as she picks them, but they are making really good smoothies. So I guess no pain, no gain. In running news, I did my first barefoot run in probably half a year. So I now have a blister the size of a Prius on my right foot, and feels good to be back having the earth under my feet again. I was inspired by Katie Bowman's book, Move Your DNA, to let go of the shoes and go au naturel, well, at least from the ankles down, thank goodness. All right, time for some thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace. You can find out more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. Also, if you're in the North Carolina Triangle area, I was on Spotify looking at upcoming concerts, and Will is playing two or three times by himself, and also part of the band, Diali Sizoku and Kyra Ba. So if you're in the area, you can just look him up by name, and you can find out all the venues where he's going to be playing. And last, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself Podcast patrons. If you feel bad about me having to hold my breath so long to read these names, and that's what's been stopping you from adding your name to this list, then you don't have to add it, but know that I find this one of the most pleasurable things of my week to go through and see how many breaths it takes me to thank all the wonderful people who make this show possible. So here we go. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Mara, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Goodman, Hadley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Burns, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jennifer Kanowski, David Bizek, The Mysterious, Michelle X, Elizabeth Thelton, Victoria Dolmanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colin Peck, Michelle Andrew, Josina, Julian Rowland, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkis, Ryan Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Peterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adamson, Franzek, Jeanette Betham, Gita Lassert, David Donahue, Blair Cyber, Doro Naviso, Gio and Carolyn, Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth M. Thunderberg, Risha Rose, Michael Warbeck, The Equally Mysterious, Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Buse, Alan, Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Berg, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Allen, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable Harry R. Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Sharp, Karen Burley, Heather Borgen, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Deanne Norton, Bonnie Lynch, Plant Heavy Organs, Sabine Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Copelschel, Ruthless, Julian Watkins, Brito Connell, Brian Sheridan, Sharon Hirschman, Kate Roseland, Daya, Julie Lang, Home, Hedda Gardy, Susan Wakati, Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Avila, Alha, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Jerry Olakowski, Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Mirani, Karen, Joe Crabtree, Kent Hanya, Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker, Miracle, Aunt Jessie, Cheryl Dwyer, Sherry, Debbie Hayes, Clint Valley, LTA, Peter W. Evans. Oh my God. Just three to go. Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, and Joshua Sommermeyer for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.